Hello, this is Tom Campbell, host of a series of interviews with local band members and music industry professionals from the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. Today's interview is with singer, songwriter, and guitar player Barry Thomas Goldberg. Hello, this is Tom Campbell. Today is April 17th, 2016, and I'm talking today with local musician and songwriter Barry Thomas Goldberg. Barry, let's start off with your full name, date of birth, and hometown, please.
Barry Thomas Goldberg, November 20th, 1950, Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And where did you grow up? What part of town?
I grew up over by the auditorium, the old Minneapolis Auditorium.
Downtown Minneapolis?
Yeah, just south of downtown.
And I understand you actually moved around quite a bit in the early days.
Yeah, a lot, like a bunch of gypsies.
What were some of the cities you lived in?
These were cities that we'd live in, and then we'd come back to Minneapolis, then we'd go back to Milwaukee, then we'd come back to Minneapolis, then we'd go to Las Vegas. Then from Las Vegas, we'd come back to Minneapolis, then we'd go back to Las Vegas, then we tried living in Miami Beach for a while. Then we took a train back to Minneapolis and back to Vegas and back to Minneapolis. Very complicated.
And what was the reason for all the moving back and forth?
My mother had a gypsy in her soul. She had wanderlust.
What do you recall about being in Las Vegas?
I recall the neon lights and the strip was incredible to me, you know, all those lights. And I remember going to a couple Dean Martin shows, Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr., the Rat Pack. I recall watching Jerry Lewis rehearse. My mother was a waitress at the Sands.
The famous Sands, where the Rat Pack first played, right?
Right.
And when did you wind up back in Minnesota for a lengthy time?
I believe we moved back in the late winter of, 1959.
Do you recall the first year you met Gary Pollack?
I met Gary Pollack at Assumption of St. Mary's Grade School.
Where was that located?
In Richfield on, I want to say, 76th.
Were you and Gary both doing anything musical at the time?
Well, Gary had taken piano lessons for his childhood, and I had just picked up a guitar.
And did you start writing songs right away?
Immediately. That's what I did right away from the get-go.
So between you and Gary, out of the two of you getting together, the result is the Shambles, correct?
Correct.
The Shambles were known for writing and playing original songs, correct?
Right.
So some of the first ones I have are Look at Me Now, 7:30 Sunset, Black Spiders and Black Robes.
Yeah, a whole bunch of great songs that were never recorded.
Any other ones from that time period you recall?
Underneath the Rug.
Ah. And you wind up over at Dove Studio and do some recording there.
Right. You became staff writers for Candy Floss.
The first song that got pressed up on vinyl, written by you and Gary, would have been what song?
Have You Ever by the Trippers.
What do you know about the Trippers?
Not much.
Were they from the Twin Cities?
They were from North Dakota, maybe South Dakota. I'm not sure.
And how was it that they happened to record your song?
They had come to Dove to record some covers, and Pete Steinberg talked them into recording this song that Gary and I had written called Have You Ever.
And that came out on what label?
It was their manager's label. I'm not sure. It might have been called Metro.
And the B-side of that was a Procol Harum song, right?
Sounds about right.
Did you ever hear Have You Ever on the radio?
I don't believe I did, but it was played in South or North Dakota.
What was it like being a staff writer with Gary and working with Dale Menton and Pete Steinberg?
Well, the beginning was great. We were at the studio from morning until late at night, and it was exciting. It was an exciting time.
What kind of equipment did Dove have in those early days as far as tracks?
It would be a four-track.
Ampex?
I believe so.
And who was the engineer there?
At that time, it was Daryl Arvidsson.
And he's one of the co-owners of the
right.
Dove, correct?
Right.
Just for the record, you had never been to the original Dove located on Westlake Street, right?
No, never.
Okay. And out of your co-writing, you come up with a hit song 20 years ago in Speedy's Kitchen.
Right.
With you, Gary, Dale, and Peter as writers.
Right.
Did WDGY and KDWB both play that song?
They did. Both radio stations played that song.
Are you aware of any other markets where that song was played?
I think it was like number one in Milwaukee, Cleveland, maybe Pittsburgh, not sure. But it was played in the U.S., in America.
Now, there's a very interesting cast of characters in that song. Do people, well, let me ask it this way. At the time, did people ask you about the characters in the song, and do they still to this day?
They didn't ask me too much back then. They have, you know, in the past few years, people have asked me about the characters.
Really? After all this time?
Mm-hmm. Like, for example, played a gig with Arnie. It was at the 3M History Center. There was a character in the song named Banus, and his family came up to me and wanted to know if this was a true story, and I had to explain to him, no, I made that up.
So they thought it was a true story.
They were a little worried.
That's funny. Following 20 years ago in Speedy's Kitchen, you had your one and only 45 out by the Shambles, correct?
Correct.
And what were those two songs?
Lights of Rome and World War II in Cincinnati.
What gave you the concept to write a song about World War II in Cincinnati?
We were trying to write about the Vietnam War and nuclear war. At the same time, we had this idea to write about time travel. So somehow this became World War II in Cincinnati.
And then at the ending, it's World War III in Cincinnati, World War IV in Cincinnati.
I continue working on this theory. I'm still writing songs like that.
You have some other songs that come out of the Candy Floss era, the Countess.
Oscar Crunch was kind of a big hit.
What were you playing on Oscar Crunch?
I was just doing background vocals, and I was a co-writer.
Mm-hmm. According to the Nickel Revolution, they weren't exactly really happy with that song, but they got a hit song out of it.
Exactly. I'd take it. We gave it to them.
Was Steinberg obsessed, so to speak, with getting a hit bubblegum-type song out of Minneapolis?
He was just he just wanted a hit.
Really bad.
He really wanted a hit.
Well, so he came close with some of these.
Yeah, Speedy's Kitchen came the closest, I'd say.
After the Batch, you turn into the Puddle for a while. Who came up with that name, by the way?
That would be Pete.
Peter came up with that?
I think so.
Mm-hmm. Was the Puddle a real band, or was it a joke?
It was a real band to us, and to everybody else, it was a joke.
Why was it a joke to everybody else? Was it because of the way the band dressed on stage?
Yes, that and how it was all cobbled together and so fake. But we became a real band out of it.
By fake? What do you mean by fake?
Well, I mean, we weren't playing the instruments. We weren't singing lead. I mean...
You mean on the record?
On the record.
Okay.
It was a real band.
So you did, yeah, you played the Pepsi pop-ups.
Right.
Right. We haven't talked about this song yet, Caesar's Little Baby. What's the story on that song?
Well, that was a song I wrote when I was like 14 or 15, and it was just a great song. And I wanted it to be the Shambles' next single. We recorded it and tried out everybody who ever came to the studio on lead vocals. somehow the tape is lost. So
now when you and Gary are writing these songs, you're only, what, 16, 17 years old?
15, 16, 17.
So that's quite young. And obviously Peter Steinberg and Dale Menton are a little bit older than you guys.
Right.
How did that work? Was there any conflicts based on the difference in age?
Oh, yeah. Big problem, especially with our parents. You know, we were spending like nights at Dove till 3-4 in the morning. We'd come home to our parents' house. It was trouble, a lot of trouble.
Now, you told me a story once about Pete Steinberg paying you and Gary royalties, apparently, for 20 years ago in Speedy's Kitchen, and you each got a $100 bill.
Right.
What'd you do with it?
Well, we'd been going to this Country Kitchen or some other restaurant. I mean, we were really hard up for money. We just had pennies and quarters and stuff, and Pete gave us each a $100 bill, and that's all we had to buy ourselves a cup of coffee. So I think we actually paid for our coffee with $100 bills. It was our way of celebrating.
So I suppose the waiter or waitress wasn't happy with...
The waitress was probably one of my old girlfriends. So there was a little bit of motivation maybe in what I was doing.
And now you and Gary get signed to Chapel Music through Dale Menton.
Yeah, that was a brief thing where we had written the music to a play that actually Dale and I had kind of worked out, and Chapel signed us to write the music to the play. Play never happened, but eventually some of the music wound up in a play that Dale wrote, which was the follow-up to 7th Indiana Cavalry.
And the play that you and Gary wrote was called what?
Gunfight at Northbridge.
Gunfight at Northbridge.
Yeah, I'm sorry. The play that the music wound up in was called 7th Indiana Cavalry.
Okay.
And that was the follow-up, along with Fred Gaines, to House of Leather.
Okay, I have Tumblewood as a...
Tumbleweeds was one of the songs we'd worked on.
Tumbleweeds?
Yeah.
That's just one of the songs.
Right.
Okay.
Batch ended up playing the music
at the Crawford Livingston.
At the theater.
Yep.
The play was actually performed or not? Or
not the play that we had worked on. Just but some of the music wound up was incorporated into that play.
And in the early 70s, you're part of the Batch.
Right.
What was that experience like?
Well, it was a great band. I mean, we were brothers. It was a tight band. We just got better all the time.
Was your goal to do all original songs?
We basically did all original songs. You know, we did covers when we had to, but mm-hmm. That's what we cared about. We came from that, so that's what that was our strong suit.
And you got a 45 out in 1972.
Right.
On Dale's label with Hot Summer Nights. I understand the radio station, KQRS, played the B-side, Golden Sun.
Right.
And after that, you're looking for record deals for the Batch.
Right.
On a major label. Did you have any luck?
We kind of came close with Elektra. I'd say Elektra was the main thing. And Columbia. Columbia wanted to put out that single of Poppin' Ice.
What's the story behind Poppin' Ice?
Poppin' Ice was Speedy, who Speedy's Kitchen is based on, used to be a fence, and he would sell. He was like the Costco in the Walmart for the freak show, and he would take goods over to the freak show at the state fair and sell stuff to the freaks. And one of them was a bearded lady. And so I wrote a song about a guy coming home from leave in the army and inherits his bearded mother's refreshment stand. And yeah, that's the story. Your typical love song.
Now, I know after the Batch in December 74, you and Gary went to Los Angeles to try to sell the two of you as a duo.
Right.
To get an album deal. How'd that go?
Oh, we met with Sam Riddle. Does that name sound familiar? Sam Riddle?
Don't know the name.
kind of a big L.A. guy. And we showed up, this was probably 75 now. We showed up in torn jeans looking like a couple kind of farmers or ranchers or something. And Sam Riddle was, you know, I mean, this was David Bowie time. And he said, look at you guys, you got your torn jeans. And then I even went back to Elektra and played him the tape of Goldberg and Pollock. And they said, you guys can't sing. And it was terrible.
The same people you had met earlier?
No, they were different people, but it was definitely a different time.
The times had changed.
Yeah, it was just 1 or 2 years, yeah.
Do you remember your final jobs at Duff's with the batch?
You know, I don't. It's kind of a blur to me.
You start in 66. You get all the way up to, the end of 74, early 75, and you've hit a lot of the common roadblocks that are in the music business.
Right.
Which really isn't all that uncommon. But how did that affect you when these things keep going wrong?
Well, I continued to believe in myself, and I just rebelled against it, and I was going to do whatever I wanted to do.
And is that when you decided to do your acoustic album?
Well, I really didn't decide to do that. It was Michael Yonkers asking me to do it.
He suggested it?
Yeah, it was his idea.
What was his reasoning? Did he tell you?
Well, he was putting out 4 albums on his label at the same time.
Called My Records.
Right. And he had enough money, or he wanted to put out 1 more album, and he wanted me to do the album. So I said yes.
And when was that album recorded?
That album was recorded in September of 1974.
And where was it recorded?
It was recorded in 2 nights at a place called Loonland, which is Michael's combination store recording studio.
Loonland.
Loonland.
And that was a Ampex
two-track? Two-track mono.
Mono. You're playing guitar and singing, and Yonkers plays on it himself, right?
Right. He plays, like, different instruments.
Now, I have in my notes that you were inspired by John Lennon's Plastic Ono Band.
I was, yes.
What was there about that album that...
Well, it was very spare and very real and not a lot of tracks. And it was just very live, and I liked that.
Okay, so Yonkers presses up 500 vinyl albums on his label.
Right.
What happens to those records? Does he sell any?
A few went to a place called Orfolk. I know Curtis A. bought one. Arnie bought one. I don't think it sold that many, but I guess it might have sold a handful. I don't know.
Now, after that, you had an experience going to Milwaukee to do some demos, then... I understand you met Ted Nugent or one of his people?
No, that was... Lou Futterman was the connection to Ted Nugent from my batch days. Lou had been the executive producer manager for Ted Nugent. But the Milwaukee gig was... I think that was 1976, and that was just a producer... took me and Gary to Milwaukee, and we recorded with a guy named Sigmund Snopek III, who probably is known to some people in Milwaukee and beyond.
But you and Gary did write songs for Ted Nugent, right?
Yeah, we tried. We attempted. We wrote 3 or 4 songs for Ted Nugent.
And I assume he didn't record any of those songs.
He did not like our songs.